In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." That is, in every aspect of how we live. Easier said than done, right? We have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, as you think spiritually about the challenges of daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliott to challenge and encourage us to holy living.
It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not be afraid or dismayed. That promise given thousands of years ago by Moses to Joshua is for you and me today, and for all who are willing to follow the Lord. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, telling you a little bit today about the country where I used to work as a missionary. I went to Ecuador in 1952 as a single woman. After about a year and a half, I married another missionary who was working on the other side of the Andes with a different tribe. His name was Jim Elliott. And Jim and I were there for 27 months together as husband and wife. And as many of you know, he was killed in 1956, along with four other American missionaries, by a tribe that my present husband, Lars Grin, and I visited last May. It was on May 21st that Gene Jordan, the son of very dear missionary friends of ours who had been in Ecuador for years, and Gene is now a pilot with Missionary Aviation Fellowship. He flew Lars and me from Quito, the capital of Ecuador, which is over 9,000 feet above sea level, to the Oriente, what they call the eastern jungle, to a little place where there's an airstrip where I had never been. It's called Toñampari, and this is where some of the Auca Indians live now. It was the Aucas who killed the five men in 1956. They are now called Waurani. My colleague, when we went back to live with those Indians after the five men were killed, was Rachel Saint. She was the sister of MAF pilot Nate Saint, one of the five who died. Well, Rachel is still working with the Aucas, with the Waurani, and she has cancer. But she has been there all these years, since 1958, when we went in to live with the Aucas, and she still lives there, and she has a house in Toñampari. She was not there in her house at the time. She was in Quito. But as we flew in, I recognized immediately one of the Auca women named Dayuma. Dayuma was there when I was there. I have to say I didn't recognize anybody else because I had not been with the Aucas since 1960. Well, before we got to Toñampari, I was overwhelmed as we flew east from Quito, overwhelmed again with the glory of the Andes Mountains, the moving clouds, the beautiful snow-capped mountain called Cotopaxi, and the green mountainsides and deep velvet valleys. I was overwhelmed thinking of the tremendous privilege that God had given to me to live in such a beautiful country and to see from the air what I had seen many times from the ground. We usually traveled from Quito down into the eastern jungle by truck or bus or whatever transportation might be available. And the buses in those days were something quite different from what they are today. But I was thanking the Lord for the tremendous privilege that I had of living in Ecuador as a missionary for 11 years. So when we got to Toñampari, it was pouring rain. And there stood Dayuma, the only familiar face, with a throng of children. Everybody very different now because they had clothes on. When I lived with the Aucas, nobody wore clothes. They wore a piece of string, not a G-string, but just a piece of string around their hips. Some of them who wanted to be very dressed up would sometimes put a piece of string around their upper arm or perhaps around their thigh. But clothes were not necessary in those days, and now that civilization has moved in force, everybody has clothes. There were dogs there. There were all sorts of wild animal pets like monkeys and parrots and macaws. And instead of having houses with no walls, which is the kind I lived in, They have wooden houses, which are not very pretty, with aluminum roofs instead of thatch. Not nearly as cool to live under as our thatched roof was. And there are school buildings built by an oil company. And right in the middle of this little clump of houses was a faucet. I couldn't believe my eyes. Apparently they had found a spring up in a hill and they'd piped the water down so people actually have running water. Then I was astounded to see that there were also electric wires going into the houses, electricity, shortwave radios. There were some Quechua women there who were married to Aucas, so it was quite easy for me to communicate with the Quechuas because I had lived with Quechua Indians for 8 years and spoke their language far better than I spoke Auca. I had only lived with the Aucas for about 2 years. Anyway, I was very thankful that the language had come back to me. I wasn't sure how well I'd be able to communicate. Then my husband Lars was very eager to see the Curaray River and perhaps the beach where the five men had been killed. So in the pouring rain, taking off our shoes, and Lars had to be persuaded to take his off. I don't think he'd ever gone barefoot in his life. He rolled up his trousers, and we slogged through the mud, which was halfway up our calves, to the Curaray River. Not very far, but it seemed quite far because of the rain and the mud. But the beach where the men were killed has long since gone because of the radical changes that those jungle rivers make as the water rises and falls. So there is no sign whatsoever of the original beach. Many people come to me with stars in their eyes and tell me that they have stood on the very sand where the five men were killed, and I don't want to disillusion them because it's a very moving experience for them, but the truth is that the sand where the five men were killed has long since moved elsewhere. There was at one time a bronze plaque commemorating the death of those men on that beach. The plaque also has long since gone. And the Indians had told me when I visited that beach back in 1960, 4 years after the men's death, that the bodies would probably have gone down the river because the river had changed so much. All of the men who did the killing, who were my friends, I could name them all. I had known the five Indians who had actually speared the missionaries, were elsewhere. And my good friends, my best friends among the women, also were elsewhere. Word had apparently not reached them that I was coming. I had thought that they knew. At any rate, I learned from those that I did talk to that pieces of the airplane had been found quite recently there in the river. Nate Saint's airplane had not been carried down the river, as had the sand and probably the bodies. So they were quite excited about that, and I was glad to hear it. I understand that that plane will probably, the pieces that they have found, will probably be taken to California and put in some sort of a museum. The next day, we went to Shandia, which was the station where my husband Jim and I had worked together. Shandia is an area where there are Quechua Indians, and the thing that really blew my mind was that it used to be a 3-day walk from the Missionary Aviation Base to Shandia, and we also did have a small airstrip, but air and foot travel were the only methods. Now, to my astonishment, what used to be our airstrip is now a road. So a missionary family drove us directly to Shandia. On the way, we stopped in at a little town called Pano, which had also been a very small mission station, and there's still a church there, and there were people in the church, and they wanted me to give a little testimony. There were many tears, and people who told me how Jim Elliott's life had changed theirs. Our guide that day was my friend Antuka, who used to be my house girl. She is now a cook in the HCJB hospital. HCJB is a shortwave station, missionary radio station in Ecuador, and they have founded several hospitals, and my friend Antuka, a Quechua Indian woman, is a cook in that hospital. So she had been our guide that day and had gone with us in the car so that we could find Shandia. And again, it was pouring rain, deep mud, There was a huge crowd of Indians by the school that Jim Elliot had begun building, and they wailed and cried, and there were tears and hugs. It is the custom among the Quechua Indians to do what I would call a death wail. It's the ritualistic wailing that they do when someone dies or when they meet the relative of someone who has died. So it was in memory of Jim, I suppose, that they threw their arms around me and wailed and howled. And the death wail is actually a recital of all the things that they are missing. My husband, Lars, stood there just dumbfounded, not knowing what was going on. And there were tears and hugs. And again, because of the rain, we slogged through the mud, waded down what was left of the airstrip to the brink of the Atung Yaku, the big river that runs into the Amazon. And from there, along a forest trail that on that day was really just a stream, water was pouring down the trail, and then up to the house that my husband Jim had built. Now, I'm going to tell you more about the visit to that house tomorrow. That was, for me, by far the most poignant part of the trip.
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.